Doesn't stand. Anyway, okay. There are exceptions to everything. We can have these semantic conversations and exceptions to the rules. I'm just kind of going with the general trend based upon physics and such. Anyone else with any comments, questions, or answers before we wrap it up?
KC2DAW with a comment.
KW.
Okay, what I was saying before is thank you for all the info and all y'all's help and stuff. Appreciate it.
You're very welcome, Curtis. Anyone with any other comments about elevators before I kind of sum it up here?
LTC?
LVC?
I just wanted to mention to Curtis before you wrap this up that I did do a little more investigation, and if he goes to k3ltc.com and clicks on links, I put some information about his radio there with a video to program it.
Very good. Did you hear that, Curtis?
Yep, I heard it. Thank you. I don't remember your call letters, but thank you.
Do you want to tell him the link again one last time?
Kilo 3 Lima Tango Charlie .com. Click on links, and you'll see it there.
Did you get that, Curtis?
Yep, thank you.
Okay, very good. Anyone else with any comments before we sum this up?
Hello, boys. I'm Tumio. I'm still asleep, but I have a question, if I may.
Rich, when we finish with this single, I'll call you and ask your question. How's that?
Dickie, 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 Dickie
end this, and we're not ending Science Talk, we're just ending this little puzzle within Science Talk, and if people want other puzzles, I've collected a few because of the New Year as a little Happy New Year's present to everyone. We could try another puzzle after I talk to Rich about what his question is. But any other questions or answers about the elevator?
This is just about the elevator. Let's go on to the next question.
Okay, so basically the people who were concerned about what the counterweight was ultimately the solution to the problem. Most of the times, elevator manufacturers will use a counterweight that's approximately half the calculated load, you know, the average amount of occupancy of the elevator to kind of limit the severe motor forces that would occur if you had extremes. So if you put a counterweight at half of the loading possible weight of the elevator, then there's a much narrower range of weights and forces that need to be applied. If you had no counterweight, it would be very difficult in one direction. If you had a counterweight that was the entire load capacity of the elevator, it would be a great force when that was empty. So the answer is that they design it so it works best when there's half a load in the elevator, because when there's a half a load in the elevator, the counterweight is about the same, and so the motor isn't really lifting per se, it's just moving things around with the same weight. So that's the answer, that the most efficient is approximately half the load.
How about a full load in your mouth?
Thank you, Peter.
ignorant.
I don't mean to go off subject here, but I'm looking for an answer. K2RIW, you've been listening to Roy's transmissions now for a while. Has his audio dropped out other than being covered up by somebody else's carrier?
Yes,
Eric. His voice drops out every 10 or 15 seconds for a half a second. I think it is voice volume related. When he is speaking softly, it seems to happen very little, but it is still happening. KE2EJ, K2LIW. All right,
thanks for that. Sorry to break up the order of things here, but I'm still looking for an answer. There's got to be a reason. I mean, we've got a different antenna, so I would say that the pattern that's being created and the null spaces that are there from the other stuff that's around, it's got to be different, because we're talking about a whole different antenna with a little bit of a difference in terms of its pattern and the way it sees the world.
82FRU with input.
Are you absolutely positive, Eric, that he is coming directly into Glen Oak and not any other remote site? Eric first, and then George next. Go ahead, Eric.
Now, if you remember, we've done the experiment of turning all the receivers off, turning on just Glen Oaks, turning Glen Oaks off, and turning just the hospital on, and we essentially get the same results. Even the other receivers see the audio dropout, but, you know, it's just a matter of we're crossing off what we can cross off before we get to something that we haven't seen yet.
I wonder if there's something peculiar about his speech clipper. Go ahead, George.
Yeah, thank you. Monitoring Roy on the input, no dropouts. Halfway between what we think he's going into is Glen Oaks, I don't know. Monitoring, no clip outs at all. 9 of 10 bars, perfect audio.
Yeah, I see the same thing. There's no dropouts on your input, Roy. So there's something about the Glen Oaks machine that thinks there's something peculiar about your signal. Go ahead, Roy.
Now, it's not only the Glen Oaks machine, it's the machine in Uniondale.
All right, wait a minute now. You say Uniondale. We're talking about the dropouts when Roy is using 8. Are you talking about some other repeater, Eric? Go ahead.
I'm talking about this repeater, but a different receiver in a different location does the same thing.
I think you're saying one of your remote inputs also has a dropout on the remote itself, on its microwave link. Go ahead.
Pick it up, here we are.
That's correct.
Okay, the common denominator is Roy. That would suggest there might be something a little bit peculiar about his speech clipper. Eric, go ahead.
Yeah, well, it also may have to do with the DSP that does the decoding of the PL, how the PL interacts with the specifics of his speech pattern, or rather the characteristics of the harmonic information that his speech creates. And I can show you people with their voice chords and the way the phonetics are created by the phonemes themselves based on the nasal cavity and stuff like that can sound absolutely horrible on one particular type of microphone. I give you a different microphone where they sound absolutely wonderful. So, I mean, we could be dealing with an issue like that.
Roy, do you have the ability sometime later to try a different microphone?
We tried different microphones, different radios, different antennas, different power supplies. We've kind of tried all those things. I mean, maybe it's just my voice, and maybe my voice has a problem with Limar repeaters. I don't know.
It could be specific to the master threes and the way that they operate. We know the bandpass filters are the specific width. That's not going to be the issue. I have a feeling that if I were to put the thing into, take it out of pound squelch, which I can't really do, the problem would go away.
The solution is to put my own voice through some kind of frequency shifter.
practical. I'm just looking for a practical answer to solve the problem, that's all.
I wonder if we had a service monitor or something like that looking directly at Roy's input signal. Would we be able to see anything peculiar happening to the PO tone, peak, specific peak of deviation of audio and so on? He's the common denominator, and he's already tried different radios, different mics, different antennas. What else can we change, Eric? We have to clone Roy.
Well, it's funny you should say that. You actually have the piece of gear that would actually be capable of looking into it.
I think you're talking about my dynamic signal analyzer. To a degree, you're right. The dynamic signal analyzer goes from essentially zero to 100 kc inclusive. And it can give you any resolution you want down to a millihertz. Is that the piece of instrument you're talking about? 8465, I think it is. Go ahead.
Yes, I am. We both know where it came from. I was actually working on a DSP issue where, typically when you want to take and grab a particular frequency and say that, yeah, that frequency is there, you have to wait a couple of cycles before you actually get a sure thing out of it. But by way of calculus and DSP, basically you just have to figure out the slope of a portion of the cycle, and you can spot out right away what the frequency is. And while working on that, it brought to mind the issue of how the decoder inside the Master 3 works, and it's almost of a similar nature.
Yeah, even with a dynamic signal analyzer, to catch the event is not going to be easy. You have to be looking with the dynamic signal analyzer simultaneously to listen to what comes through the repeater so that you know which millisecond did the dropout occur. And now to capture that on the screen of the dynamic signal analyzer, that doesn't sound quite as easy as the words would indicate. Go ahead.
No, I understand where you're going. I agree with you. I mean, yeah, we could set up a really sophisticated trigger, so to speak. But I'm thinking that there's a more common characteristic that's probably going to be noticeable just in the course of observing the transmission with speech.
What you're saying, look at the output of a broadband discriminator and carefully study that demodulated audio slash subtone.
I think there's got to be some kind of a common characteristic, whether it's a cancellation effect or a spoof thing. The specifics of a sibilance of phonemes and things of that nature kind of let themselves become visible, so to speak.
Okay, it's a mystery, and to be resolved at a later time. Back to you, Roy.
Okay, very good. I appreciate all the work going on to figure it out. Who would have thunk that my blanking out on the repeater could be as mysterious as neutrinos? But nevertheless, Richard, you have N2EO. You have a question?
Yes, Roy, N2EO. I'm sorry I didn't get in here earlier. I was very tired and I went to sleep. So I appreciate you picking me up now. Two things. First of all, Andy, WATCDL. I know he listens. I have a brand new phone. I lost my contacts. I hope he can call me either tonight or tomorrow on the telephone. Andy was supposed to come here today, but he never showed. So I wanted to talk to him. Also, the question, I have Metro PCS as my provider. They used to say riding on the T-Mobile network, not a part of T-Mobile. Since that, let me recycle. All I'm getting is a barrage of advertisements. So many, it makes it almost impossible to use a phone or to text to do anything. I wonder if anybody knows Maybe I did something to unlock. I need to put, I have to get rid of those advertisements. They're coming to me on Metro PCS. Does anybody know? Were they getting the advertisements too?
Rich, I don't have any familiarity. If it's a budget plan, this is maybe how they're financing it budget-wise, that they're making the rest of it off on advertisement. But again, I'm unsure. If anyone else is familiar with PCS and their practices, please feel free.
82FIU, Roy, I was thinking the exact same thing, but I was going to use different wording. Very good, Roy.
Thank you very much, George. Anyone else with any insight into this PCS thing? Unfortunately, if you go with companies that give you the lowest price, a lot of times they cut a lot of corners. There's no such thing as a free lunch, as a great author once said.
You know, if you read the contract that you sign when you buy a phone, you find a lot of the stuff there. But the ultimate source is the company itself. There's nothing to stop you from calling them up and asking them questions.
WS2N.
Oh.
Rich could try shutting off the data. The data on, data off. You go to settings. Maybe that's the problem. This way you're... Everything will work at home with your Wi-Fi, your email, your telephone, you know, but the data part will be shut down.
Well, that actually might work unless they're very sneaky people. You know, you can play a lot of games with the firmware and shut it off for everything except the advertisement.
Okay, well, I shut it down on mine, so that helps.
Paul, are you saying
the companies are a little bit more aggressive than others? But I kind of agree with Eric that probably the best approach is to call these people up and complain and see what they're going to do about it.
Paul, are you saying that you were also getting a lot of ads before you turned off the data submenu? Go ahead, Paul.
No, not a lot, you know. But enough where... You know, the last thing you need is this thing going off as you're driving in the car, and then you pull over, you think it's somebody, and it's an ad, you know. So, I don't know, maybe once a month or something. Nothing to get excited about. But also, because the data, they charge you separately, you know, with my plan anyway. I would have to keep adding more money to it. I don't use it, so I just shut it off.
I got one more thing to add. Many of the phones, apps that call in-app purchases and things of that nature, they run in the background, and some of them will pop up their little pop-ups with their ads, you know, buy our services, blah, blah, blah. When you turn the data off of the phone, you essentially turn off your texting, your email, all that stuff. And you're preventing it from going through the cell network so you don't get charged for data. That's why that switch is there.
Yeah, but it still works for Wi-Fi. I'm sure that's all Rich cares about.
Which is for just data on the cellular network, which is, you know, is pay-as-you-go if you've got a pay-go phone.
Rich's case, but it could simply be that he has some application where the notifications are turned on that they should be turned off. But I'm not a big fan of Android, so I couldn't give any details. I'm an iPhone type of guy.
You get that on iPhones too when you go to settings. You can turn that stuff on and off for each individual app.
I'm aware of iPhone. I just don't know about the nuances of Android. I assume they have incredible granularity. So the trouble is probably finding the subsetting hidden away in some set. Submenu somewhere.
You're right. They have similar functions. They're just buried in different places.
So ultimately, the answer to the question, the best answer that we can come up with, Richie, is call up your provider, explain your problem, and if you're very lucky, you'll have someone who knows what they're talking about who might be able to help you.
Hey, Roy. I did call them, but I can't get through. And when I do get through, they only speak poor English. It's really bad. There's no budget plan. It's the same thing I had, $30 a month. In fact, I just paid. It's always due on the 6th of the month. I paid it before, so I don't know. It's a new phone. This lady, Verna, who's a home care lady, she bought it for me for Christmas. She's going to bring it back tomorrow to Metro PCS and see what they can do.
82FIU Mitch, I wish you luck with it. You know, there's an old, rather cynical line that you get what you pay for. So you buy premium, hopefully you get premium. You buy bottom pricing, you don't get too many extras involved. So I hope that works for you, Richie.
But don't look the gift horse in the mouth. Sorry.
Okay, well, that's a regular price. It's not a premium. It's not a something else. It's a regular price. When I had the old phone, I didn't get the advertising. This was a Christmas present. Because for a long time, I was out without a phone. The other one got damaged. This one is fine. It's only a month that I didn't have the phone. And before that, I had no advertising. Back to you, boy.
82FIU.
George.
What media is the advertising coming in? Are they text messages? Are they text messages with data downloads, as in pictures? Or is it happening on your email? Is it happening when you open the World Wide Web and go to something like a website like MSN.com or ATG.com? Where are the messages coming in from? Or is it phone calls?
Forget. It's coming in no matter what. I could be texting. I could be doing nothing. I could be texting. I could do anything. Maybe making a call. And before I can make the call, the advertising comes up. I don't know. It's usually coming from the Google Play Store. I tried to eliminate the Google Play Store. It won't allow me to do that.
Okay, so the phone is always interconnected to the web. Is that correct?
I believe that's correct, George.
Okay, there was an early suggestion to shut off the data and just use the phone as a cell phone, which is, of course, a totally different stream of information at different speed. Try shutting off data in the phone and see if that happens, and try operating the phone as a telephone, a cell phone telephone.
Okay, George. Boy, not being able to text and also search the World Wide Web. I really enjoy that, so I don't know. Boy, back to you. I don't want to tie it up.
Just trying to isolate, Rich, where it's coming from. I'm not sure, because text and phone come over a different stream of information versus the internet. There's shutting each of the three off my phone. originally mentioned, which I agreed with immediately, that a budget plan sometimes does this, doesn't let you control the information that you're receiving and sending.
Enough. I think we came to a decision on this, okay, everyone? Okay, very good. I don't know if you guys watch too many YouTubes or such. There was a particularly fascinating one, at least for me. An ex-NASA engineer was upset by the fact that a couple of his packages were stolen during the holiday season, and so he decided to build a booby trap. He took a box that looked like it was an expensive bit of electronic consumer gadgetry, but instead it was a few cell phones with their GPSs and their cameras running. It was a tray of beer in a motorized bowl, and he even included a stink bomb to motivate the thief to dump his ill-gotten game away so that he could the guy could pick up his cell phone and everything and try it again. So it's a YouTube. It's very fascinating. It's kind of nice to see someone get what they deserve. So again, if you go to roy.ac2gs.com, there's a link for that. When you have a time and nothing better to do, click on it. It'll amuse you. Let me drop.
Well, he's got a lot of good stuff. That was really great, but his Super Water Pistol and a few other things are fabulous, too.
Eric, I agree. He's a good producer of video. Unfortunately, his friends tried to kind of make it look better than it was and faked some of the stuff, so he had to come clean about that, and he had to resubmit a video with that stuff removed. So it kind of, unfortunately, gave a little tinge of something. But, yeah, there's a whole bunch of people who produce wonderful videos. They're free. You may have to watch a little bit of an ad, but they're very entertaining and informative.
Okay.
Put up on my webpage is a recordings of some people's space weather. It's apparently a collection of audible radio sounds that are actually in our hearing range, as opposed to the ones that are either very high or very low that we really can't appreciate. And they're showing up in video games and all over the place. I don't think playing them here would really work, but if you go to my link page, roy.ac2gs.com, and you can click on the link, and there's a bunch of audio files that you just click on and listen to, I think you guys will find it fascinating as well. Let me drop for a second, and then I'll give you another little puzzle.
VDH with a comment.
VDH.
Roy, are you talking about those VLF audio surfaces and whistlers and whatnot? Go ahead.
The ones that don't have to be processed to be audible, though, because there's a lot of strange things out there that are beyond our ability to perceive, and NASA has this helpful quality of, you know, photoshopping images and up frequency or down converting frequencies, but these are supposedly native frequencies that the human ear can hear, and you don't have to be 10 years old either. So I thought it would be kind of fascinating.
Oh, okay, fine business. Yeah, I was thinking of the VLF sounds, the surfing and the whistlers and whatnot that I've heard from some of the VLF receivers. Okay, thanks, Roy. Go ahead.
Okay, here's another little puzzler. Apollo 11 had many firsts, as we all know. Neil Armstrong was the first man to step on the moon on July 20th, 1969, but not as many people know that Buzz Aldrin had a whole different first for mankind soon after Neil did his thing. Here's a little hint. We all have done what Buzz did a few times already today, albeit we didn't do it, we did it here on Terra Firma instead of the moon. So, does anyone have any idea what Buzz Aldrin was the first man to do on the moon right after Armstrong was the first man to step on the moon?
Check his shit!
He's all flat in his face.
I think we would have noticed
N2
that.
N2 JKV.
Any possible ideas of what he was the first man to do on the moon?
JKV has a suggestion. Go ahead, JKV.
Shit on the moon.
Thank you. Thank you, N2JKV, John here. Yes, I do. I don't want to be a spoiler here, but he actually took communion.
That is true, and we actually touched upon that. That was in the question of what was the first meal. What did people have for the first meal on the moon? And the answer was that he had snuffed some sanctified wine and such. And yeah, but that's not. He did that later on. The point is, right after Neil Armstrong stepped onto the moon, Buzz Aldrin, within minutes, did something for the first time on the moon as well.
WS2N.
Cool. I thought you would have the answer.
Yeah, well, the answer comes from his book. Now, I know the answer, so I'm not going to spoil it. So, but the name of his book is the first two words that he said when he was on the moon. So you can add that to your puzzle. But what occurred first?
I would assume it was the first words first, but what we have to ask Buzz.
He named the book after the first two words that he said when he was on the moon. But that's not the answer to your question. I'll let somebody else answer that.
Was his first word contact light?
No, that's after they landed it. What are you talking about when he was actually standing on the moon?
Something like beautiful diversity, or drastic diversity of the view he was seeing?
Close. Magnificent desolation.
I think the guy was a poet there.
WTBZ?
French. Rich, are you there?
I am on Echolink, very, very flaky. Just two things. I have a question. Took communion from who?
My understanding is he gave it to himself. He was apparently a high up in his local church, and so he felt that he could do that for himself.
Well, as you know, I'm Jewish, so what do I know? Just quickly on a way back topic of conversation. As you know, I've been struggling to get a decent signal, consistent signal into Selvin from Riverhead. So I have ordered a 8900. And I downloaded the manual, and the first sentence in the manual is, "Thank you very much for using my company produces the radios." Now, right there, it doesn't inspire great confidence, but I did a whole bunch of research, and it works with Quirp and some other things, and comes with the data cable. I'll report back next TechSlink. TechNet. Thanks, Roar, WTBZ.
Very good, Rich. I wish you good luck. And yes, Chinglish. Using Chinglish can be difficult, and not terribly rewarding either. So once again, anyone else have any idea what Buzz Aldrin did first on the moon after Neil Armstrong was the first man to step on the moon? And once again, my big hint is that all you guys have done this at least a few times today, just not on the moon.
Even a wild guess.
guess away.
Maybe he burped, and then the two words were, excuse me. Thank you.
WS2N, do you want me to end this, Roy?
What the heck, Paul? And probably you could phrase it far better than I could.
Urinate.
Indeed, Paul. He built his little urine bag right after he got on the moon. For some odd reason, he thought that that was the most appropriate moment to do that. And he's done a lot of interviews where he discusses it. He with a sly smile on his face. So he's up there in age, Paul. How old is he? 88, 89? He's a feisty old guy.
Yeah, he's probably all born in 1930. I think they were all three were right the same age. It's in the 80 plus category. But yeah, the daughter and the son. They claim he's got a bit of dementia, so they're having some problems with that. So he's still out. He's up and around.
That's a shame. I mean, I remember he was recently at the White House for some kind of photo op, and he was making funny faces at the cameras and such. I was a little bit confused by that, but I guess he just had a novel imagination, a strange sense of humor, what have you. He, if memory serves me, Paul, and you know better than I, he was the guy who... someone when they suggested that the moon landing was a complete sham, right?
Yeah, I seen that video, that clip on him. Yeah, he swung at some guy, a reporter.
It's kind of, you know, you went through all that and then some guy just tells you you basically lied about it all and made it up. So I could sort of understand where that would elicit an emotional response.
Yeah, well, one of the good guys. They're dropping like flies, and very few of them that are left that actually walked on the moon. So, hope we get there soon. Back to you, Roy.
Okay, very good. Got another little puzzler. I don't know exactly how scientific it might seem, but it's about polls, and polls are based on statistics as well as political science. And anyway, I found it rather unexpected and interesting, so I'll offer it to the group to discuss for a few minutes. Pew Research is a very respected polling group, as we all know, hopefully. They regularly poll people from different nations, whether they have favorable or unfavorable opinions about the United States, among many other things. And the most recent results that I could find were back in 2017. Now, United States citizens being a humble group, we held ourselves in the highest regard with the top 85% favorable rate. My question for the audience, keeping in mind that not every state in the world, every country in the world, was asked that question, polled that question in 2017, who do you think was the country that apparently loved us almost as much as we love ourselves? Didn't really make that out. I mean, there's a lot of countries out there. Who do you think loves us best?
82 FIU.
George.
Mexico.
We've had better days with Mexico, George. A 30% favorable rating in 2017. You got to realize... went on in 2017, The border discussions, the tax discussions, all those things kind of soured them on us.
I wasn't thinking like that.
Okay, but that's the way people tend to think. If you like me, I like you. If you don't like me, chances are I don't like you either. So that's human nature.
Could it be Canada, Roy?
Again, in the old days, probably would be decent, but for some odd reason, we almost went to war with them. We had tariff problems with them as well. They went down from a rating of about 65 in 2016 to 43. So, no, they're not our friends anymore.
WS2N, question about the polling system that you're going by.
Okay.
Is the polling asking Americans who do we think would like us best, or is the polling going around to all these 300 different countries wondering which, you know, asking them which country likes us the best?
It's the latter. We love ourselves to pieces, 85%. The question was also asked among a good sampling of other countries, whether they hold us favorable or unfavorable. And these are the percentages of people who check the favorable box in the different countries.
WB2GXM.
Okay, now I'll go with New Zealand because of the motion picture industry. I'll choose New Zealand.
Would probably be a very good choice. Unfortunately, for some strange reason, New Zealand is not among the lists that they collected, because it's not a complete list, unfortunately. But still, I found this kind of amazing and amusing. GXM, you wanted to say something?
Thank you, Roy. WB2GXM, this is Rich. I am going to throw out my guess as it is Japan.
Again, W2BC. We have been close buddies with Japan for many years. Back in 2016, we had a 72% favorable rating with the Japanese. Fortunately, 2017, it dropped to 57%.
W2BC, go ahead.
Roy, is it fair that we talked about this and I got, first I said Germany, which wasn't it, and then I got it. Is it fair that I say what I know to be true?
Let's play it for as long as it will play, and then you can give the answer away. How's that?
AC2BAW.
Good.
Great Britain.
Well, I for some strange reason you would think that Great Britain would be on here. I think we have the same exact problem, that they're kind of angry with us right now. There's a lot of countries, unfortunately, that are angry with us. Bill in Bill on Echo Link suggested Australia, which is close to New Zealand. Australia, you know, we had a fight about the first minute of the presidency. You know, he insulted the president there, and it dropped from 60% to 48%. So Australia is not our best buds either.
How about, Israel, and even better yet, like Vietnam? You did mention that we were at war with them at one point, and although their view of us is probably about to change because of some rules being made as far as the internet there goes.
Okay, that's a great, I sort of probably would have picked Israel, because we seem to be best buddies these days, and certainly it's 81%, which is one of the highest ones. But the number again, because we're number one, we love ourselves the most. The number two is, and I found it a little bit surprising, except if you think about it long enough, is Vietnam. The Vietnamese love the United States, 84%. That's 1% less than we love ourselves.
Love you long time.
You know, I mean, you think that we made any kind of enemies, but interestingly enough, human beings can become friends with past enemies. The Germans, the Japanese, I mean, you can make a laundry list of, we fought the British a couple of times. So I guess the best way to make friends is to have a war with them.
Roy, was that South Vietnam and not North Vietnam? Because do you know what North Vietnam calls the Vietnam War? Do you know what they call it?
But assume it was the war of the War of Liberation. But you know, talking about Vietnam, I'm basically talking about the entire country of Vietnam, because once the North won, they basically absorbed the South and did away with the North and South nonsense and just made it plain old Vietnam. But apparently we have invested a great deal of money in Vietnam. They are trying to start up industries and businesses, and they're doing rather well. And, you know, business people, investors love them, and they love us.
That is amazing. At one time in Vietnam, that war was called the American War.
There are a few five-star hotels now in Vietnam.
I thought it was fascinating that of all the places in the world, the only country we really haven't upset is the Vietnamese. Who would have figured?
They must be very forgiving people. The total number of Vietnamese that died in that war is a huge number.
I guess investment trumps old wars or something. I mean, look, the Germans did a lot of terrible things. The Japanese did a bunch of nasty, terrible things, but we became friends with them. You know, sometimes the way to friendship is a very, very strange route.
Trump love you long time.
Roy, we became friends because we took them over.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's a complicated relationship, I'll give you that. But I think if you ask the Germans if we took them over, they would sort of disagree. And judging from their economy and the strength that they have in Europe, they would have a good reason to disagree. I mean, we may have had a military presence there forever, but I don't think we run the place. Do you?
I have copies of dictionaries from 1950 that were exchanged between both countries. Theirs were in English with German breakdown. None of ours were. I mean, ours were to educate us. It was the same way. We gave business to Japanese. We brought them into business. We helped build these countries the way that we did on our victories. Don't back off from that.
Boy, that sounds really wrong.
Chill, love you long time.
Sounds what?
George, I'm not backing off of anything. The Marshall Plan was the most brilliant thing that this country has ever come up with. The absolutely worst example of what to do when you win a war is the Versailles Treaty, because that basically sowed all the seeds for World War II right there and then. So it was brilliant of the Marshall Plan and everyone involved in the Marshall Plan, and I don't think we kind of fooled them. We help them, they help themselves, then they help us. It's a very nice relationship. So I don't exactly know what direction this is going in, because as I always say, the political net begins at 12:05.
at a time, but all I'll say is we didn't rub it in anybody's face. We just helped them build up.
Agree with you completely, George, but if you go back to the Versailles Treaty, that's where a lot of those rubbed in a lot of ground.
Net time complete.
Anyway, this has been the Science Talk Puzzle Night. I thought you guys would like puzzles for this particular episode. Keep in mind, once again, that if you want to email me any topics, any questions, any comments, any refutations, it's mailbag@ac2gs.com. If you want to look at any of the links of any of the things that I talked about, it can be found on roy.ac2gs.com. And if any of you guys have nothing better to do and want to chat, I'm always watching the chat room, which you can get by typing chat.ac2gs.com. So this is Science Talk for this week, and maybe I'll be able to dig up some more puzzles next week if you guys like it. And on to Space Report.
Very good, Roy. Let me just pass that over to Dick and see if he has anything to say before we start this part of the net. KQRIWWS.
We're looking forward to what you've got to say, Paul. China's done some good things on the backside of the moon, and we've done some good things with linking up with an asteroid. Over to you, Roy. Over to you, Paul. Sorry about that.
Very good. Oh, yeah. Sure did. Back in 2006, we launched, in January, we launched the New Horizons spacecraft. And took off and went, I mean, it was the most powerful rocket we had at the time, which was the Atlas V, and it had five solid boosters attached to it. So it was the fastest spacecraft that would ever left this Earth. They didn't have any planets to any gravitational assist with. Even Jupiter, they got close to it with pictures and everything, but not much of a gravitational assist on that. And it just kept on going, and their goal was to get, of course, to Pluto, which it did. Did take pictures of Jupiter as it went by, and it took pictures of an earlier asteroid just to check out the equipment on board New Horizons, but it just kept on going. And July 14th, a couple of years ago, 2015, New Horizon made it to Pluto, and we covered that extensively on this net. For John, you there, so a lot of questions, in case you do WGB. And he was fascinated with that. He was also fascinated with the idea of where it was going to go after it went to Pluto. He successfully took all these pictures of Pluto and Charon and the other four moons of Pluto as it went by. But then the goal was to go to another Kuiper Belt object. Pluto is now part of the Kuiper Belt system. And they looked endlessly. And in 2014, right before they got to Pluto, they used the Hubble Space Telescope, and they found this object that was about a billion miles past Pluto, and it was called, they named it Ultima Thule. Actually, they gave it a regular designation first before giving it that name. It was called 2014 MU. And he was 69. He got the 2014 from when it was discovered by Hubble. And they looked at this thing and they figured, okay, that's a good thing for the next target. And they figured out where it was and how long it would take. And it turned out it was going to be January 1st of 2019 this year when it would be getting very close to it. And they did plenty of research. They went to different countries with telescopes. They wanted to find out more about this object. And the reason they went to these different countries with telescopes and set them up all over They were looking for an oculation. They needed to have the object, Alpha Thule, go past a star, any star. And they figured out which one it would be passing at a certain date, a certain time, a certain second. And they did that. They went to Argentina, and they went to South Africa. They set up these telescopes, and they looked. Eventually, they thought they would be able to do it, and didn't do it. They were unsuccessful. So they had one other way to do it, to look at the population. The reason they needed that, they wanted to see how big this thing was. You know, they could pass in front of a star, and it lasted, you know, a second or two. They could tell the size of this thing. So since the trips to the foreign countries didn't work, they tried the Sophia 747 telescope. Sophia is a telescope about the size of Hubble, and it sticks out of the side of a 747 that NASA has, and they flew to a certain location over the Pacific, a certain location where this next oculation was going to be. Sure enough, it picked it up, and it matched their predictions, and they figured out that this thing was going to be about 20 miles long. When I say long, they sort of had two lobes to it. So to make a long story short, New Horizons went right by at 12:33. I was watching this. It's naturally a 9-hour delay by the time you get the signals back. But they had animations of what it would look like at 12:33, and a bit of a celebration by the people there. Not confirmed. They had to wait until, 9 hours later. Turns out that 9 hours later, they were watching on NASA TV. Sure enough, they did get that confirmation. And it was very similar to what you were watching. Was very similar to what they did on the Pluto bypass a couple of years earlier. Had controllers there, and the controllers had to look at the screens to figure out the data that was coming across to see if there was an RF lock or if the memory was filled with information. Because as it went by, it was going to take thousands of pictures and information off the Kuiper Belt object, and they needed to know if it worked. So actually, on January 1st, that morning, they had it on live, and they had Alice Bowman there. Alice is the main controller, and she would give out the reports as they were coming in. The main controller's name is actually Mom, so they refer to her as Mom when they call her. And MOM stands for Mission Operations Manager. So Alice gave the reports, and sure enough, at the end, stood up and said that they had a lock and that all the memory on the data banks were all filled in this little flash drive. I believe it's something like 8 megabytes of data that's stored. So they got all these dozens of pictures and all of that. And then soon after that, they did wind up with their first and second pictures. And then another picture or two, I already got a 3D one that's come down. I looked at that with my 3D glasses. It's pretty interesting. And the thing looks like what they predicted. It's got a big base to it and a head. And it kind of looks like a snowman. They built a snowman in the backyard. That kind of a look. And they gave the body part the name Ultima, and then the top part, Thule. That's what they call it, Ultima Thule. So it was very successful and very interesting and very challenging work for people that have been at this for 15 some odd years or more, from the Johns Hopkins Applied Physics Laboratory in Maryland. So congratulations to that group, and we're going to be looking for more data eventually as it comes in. There'll be high resolution pictures and plenty of other instruments on board that took the information to figure out what the thing's made out of, and all that information will come back to the scientists, but it's going to take a long time. They only have a 7-foot diameter dish on board that transmits in the X-band.